Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This hour of the Annie Fry Show is sponsored by The Loading Dock, with a unique and beautiful ice skating rink to enjoy this time of year. Go to graftonloadingdock.com.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Don't get me wrong. I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
For goodness sake, Kith, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome into the Annie Fry Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Beautiful Wednesday out there right now, and we are glad that you are here with us. This has been a news action-packed morning, and you know, if you haven't, I don't know, this kind of pulls at me in both directions, because I generally try not to get too into the weeds on issues that if you want to delve into the inner workings of the Supreme Court and listening to, I do, I'm a nerd, but I know that that's, special, that's a way to put it, specific to me, that is something I might want to steep my interest in. But what has taken place today, arguing in front of the Supreme Court, an issue that if you were to do what most people do and go on Twitter to figure out what was going on, you would think that Roe v. Wade is hanging in the balance, that potentially Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned and that abortion will be made illegal. And people are either freaking out about that or championing that. And as is usually the case, it's just really not that simple. In fact, it's a very specific challenge to the status of abortion in our country. And it comes from the state of Mississippi. Now, I've told you about all of the things that I can specifically tell you with certainty, probably, hopefully I didn't get it wrong, without bringing in a legal expert. And that is why we have the Heritage Foundation's legal fellow, Zach Smith, on with us now. Zach, save me before I say stupid things and smart people like you go, oh, sweetheart, no. I listened to the whole thing this morning. And this is something where I generally, if I'm listening to something like this, I'll drift off in my own thoughts and I won't be able to pay attention. But I was riveted today. I was glued to it today. For people who may not know what took place this morning, give us that really baseline overview of what the Supreme Court took on today.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for having me on to talk about this case. And what you were saying right before I came on was not stupid at all. In fact, you
yes.
were hitting all of the main issues very well. So well done.
Thank you. We should end the interview right there. That should be it. Thank you, Zach Smith. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Always happy to come on, always. But But no, look, this is a very important case, probably the most momentous case the court's going to hear this term, and frankly, one of the most momentous ones it's going to hear in a very, very long time. Essentially, what the court's being asked to do is overrule their prior precedents in Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And if they did that, what that would mean, it wouldn't mean that all abortions are immediately outlawed or prohibited across the country. It would return the issues back to the states, where it resided before the court created this right out of whole cloth with its Roe v. Wade decision. And look, I think it's important to recognize, even if you agree with abortion, I do not, I think it's bad as a policy matter, but even if you disagree with me on the policy grounds, the legal underpinnings of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which give the constitutional right to an abortion, are very problematic. And even liberal legal scholars have recognized the problematic nature of the constitutional or legal underpinnings of those decisions. And so I think it's perfectly appropriate for all of us to say, look, even if abortion, if, you know, we disagree about abortion, whether it should be legal or illegal, it is not appropriate for our federal courts to create this right out of whole cloth because it's found nowhere in the text, structure, or history of our Constitution.
We're speaking with Zach Smith. He's a legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation to break down what has taken place so far this morning with the Supreme Court as they hear an abortion case. The words that I heard, I'm going to give these to you in order that I want you to respond to them. The words that I heard over and over and over again, the first one was viability. And how that is really at the very core of what is being discussed here. And then stare decisis, which I assume is a really fancy way to explain something that I actually do understand. So let's start with the viability part of this and explain how that is really what is on trial in this situation.
So viability is the line that the court created. The Supreme Court created this line basically as kind of the bright line where the states, after viability, would have a more compelling interest in regulating abortion. Pre-viability, essentially, there's not much states can do to regulate abortion. And all that viability line means is whether or not an unborn child can survive outside of the womb. Now, what's interesting about this, you know, in the 70s when Roe v. Wade was first decided, that viability line occurred much later in pregnancy. But because of the advances in medical technology, that viability line keeps getting earlier and earlier and earlier in pregnancy. And so I think what the Mississippi advocates were trying to say, who were urging the court to overturn Roe v. Wade, is that, look, the factual situation in the 1970s and even in the 90s when Planned Parenthood v. Casey was heard are much different than they are today. Not only are there medical advances that make pregnancy, childbirth much safer than they have been historically, but also there are new laws and programs in place to help women if they, in fact, go through and have a child. And so I think it was all to say that, look, even the policy arguments, which the justices should not be in the business of advancing, but even those arguments no longer really support the court's continued adherence to Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey.
So, you know, we're go ahead.
Now, I just can quickly answer your second question, A, about stare decisis. You know, if only someone had written a paper explaining stare decisis called Stare Decisis 101. my colleague Tom Gippy and I at Heritage actually wrote that paper earlier this year. You can check it out on my Twitter at TZ Smith or at heritage.org. But we wrote the paper because we anticipated this would be an issue in this case. And it basically explains what it is, how it's been applied by the court, and why, you know, in our view, it shouldn't really be applied for the court to continue adhering to Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey.
You could call that stare decisis for dummies. I don't know if there's a copyright infringement there.
Not at all.
So, yeah, there are a lot of legal experts on Twitter right now. If you haven't looked, there are a lot of people who are weighing in with their legal expertise. You know, one of the things that I heard, and I can't remember which justice it was, and I don't know if you were able to take in the whole hearing, but they were talking about viability, and they were questioning the argument that was being made in favor of, you know, pro-choice abortion rights. The justice said, you know, wouldn't a woman's interest in being able to terminate her pregnancy be the same before viability and after viability, suggesting that if we draw this, you know, some might call it an arbitrary line. I wouldn't call it an arbitrary line at 15 weeks. And you find out, you discover you're pregnant at 12 weeks, which is an absolutely possible time frame to discover that you're pregnant. You discover that you're pregnant at 12 weeks and you determine, I want to end this pregnancy. I'm going to have an abortion. If you were to discover you were pregnant at 16 weeks, you would still have those same interests, you know, if that was what you wanted to do at 16 weeks. And then they then turned it around and said, wouldn't the fetus or whatever they referred to the baby as, I call it a baby because of the baby, wouldn't the baby have the same interests before and after that same line of viability?
Well, that's exactly right. And I think it really goes to show kind of what a house of cards this is and how the logic starts to collapse on itself once you start digging into these questions. And look, one of the best questioners I think that's emerged recently on the court is Justice Clarence Thomas. He started asking more questions during the pandemic, the telephonic oral arguments, and he's continued that trend. And I thought he asked one of the most pointed questions today, oral arguments. He put it to those who were urging the court to keep Roe, to keep Casey. He said, look, you know, in the past, we have held that a state can prosecute a mother who has ingested cocaine post-viability and has harmed the child. Why couldn't the state prosecute her for ingesting that cocaine and harming the child pre-viability as well?
Right.
Clearly, the state has an interest in protecting both the mother and child from the harm that's caused by cocaine, whether it's post-viability or pre-viability. And so I think his point was that interest, and it's the same point you were making, doesn't really change regardless of which side of that viability line you're on.
We're speaking with Zach Smith, who is a legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. I could talk about this for 3 hours. There's some people in my audience who would love for me to do that. There are other ones who have already turned us off. I hope they come back. So we would like to have you back to talk more about this after we find out more. I want to ask you two questions before I get onto the other subject here that I want to hit regarding Heritage Foundation, something very important that's going on there. Did you feel, listening to the arguments today, did you feel a shift? Did somebody come out ahead? Going into the locker room at halftime, was there somebody who you felt like was winning? And then what is the timeline ahead of us? Is this decision going to be decided tomorrow, or is it going to take some time?
Well, I think the most important three justices to watch in this are Justices Barrett, Kavanaugh, and the Chief Justice, John Roberts. You know, if one of them were to defect and kind of decide the case and uphold Roe or Casey, you know, there were still likely the votes there to overturn those decisions. But if all three of the justices were to vote with the liberal bloc of the court, that would not be a good outcome, I don't think, for this case. You know, certainly based on I'm hesitant to read any tea leaves. Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, they were asking very good questions. You know, Justice Kavanaugh gave a list of other cases that the Supreme Court has overruled in the past. The one justice I think that it'll be interesting to watch is Chief Justice John Roberts, see what he tries to do. You know, he's been accused of trying to be a political justice in the past. I certainly hope he doesn't take political considerations into account and just sticks to the law and reaches what I view as the legally correct conclusion that those decisions should be overturned. Now, in terms of timing, I suspect we won't see this decision until closer to the end of the court's term, which typically occurs in June every year. So we probably have about 6 or 7 months before we'll know the outcome of this case.
And just before the 2022 elections, that should be very, very interesting to see. So let's shift gears here. Speaking with Zach Smith, the legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. I only have a couple minutes, but I want to talk about the Heritage Foundation's role in pushing it back against Biden's vaccine mandate for private companies.
Right.
Heritage Foundation has over 200 employees, and they've taken a stand here. Tell me about what the Heritage Foundation is taking up on behalf of this anti-vaccine mandate stance.
Well, look, Heritage Foundation filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration. And I think it's important to realize, Annie, you know, filing lawsuits against the administration is not something traditionally that the Heritage Foundation has done. We traditionally have provided the research, the writing, you know, kind of the back end support to a lot of other conservative organizations who go out and actually do the frontline litigation. But because this mandate applied directly to the Heritage Foundation, as it does to other private businesses, because it's such an egregious overreach by the Biden administration, I think it was important for Heritage to step forward and basically make clear, no, this is legally problematic. We're going to take a stand, and we're going to sue to protect, our rights and the rights of our employees, and frankly, the rights of all Americans. And so that's what exactly happened in this case. And so Heritage filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, basically asking a court to declare their vaccine mandate unconstitutional.
What's the timeline on this lawsuit? How quickly could it have some sort of effect on what people are required to do?
Well, it's hard to say. It's particularly hard to say because there are so many lawsuits out there challenging the vaccine mandate. Most of those lawsuits have been consolidated in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. They're acting on a pretty expedited schedule there. A lot will depend on how the court rules on a couple of procedural motions. But I am hopeful that this will continue to move at a very quick pace because the issues are so very important.
Well, we want to follow up on both of these really important issues facing Americans in all states. I personally am appreciative of Heritage Foundation stepping into the fray here to push against these tyrannical mandates from this administration. And as far as the Supreme Court conversation about abortion goes, as you said, this is a big one. And I think a lot of people
Absolutely.
Will have their eyes upon it. And we need people like you to help break it down for us. I'm going to call me a dummy. I won't call my listeners dummy. They're smart because they listen to the show. But I need it in plain, simple terms. And I'm grateful for you, Zach. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on, Annie. Take care.
You as well. Zach Smith, a legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. It is my goal in life to be a fellow, or as I think that they might call women. I'm not certain about this. A fella. I want to be a legal fella. No, not a legal fella. I just need to be a fella. Is that how it works in the English language? Is this like how?
I am the last person you should be asking.
Just
that
make
question.
Some. Just make something smart up.
Yes, that's absolutely yeah. how it should work. And Annie, you should be a legal fella.
A legal fella.
Fella. But I think we need to emphasize a different syllable, though, right?
Fella.
Fella.
Fella. That makes it sound real fancy. You know what? I have the entire rest of this hour open, and I did that because. Brad's been working his tail off to try to get us clips so that we can listen to in pieces what took place today. And I'm going to say this to you while you're listening right now. I get that for some of you, there's no issue more important than the issue of life and abortion. And it is your heart's passion to fight against this. And I understand that there are other listeners maybe like you, this is your least favorite issue to talk about. Maybe I'm talking into the wind here because those folks have turned off the station and they're listening to Christmas music on KZK. It's a good choice. I want to tell you that today, what took place at the Supreme Court is historical. It is important. And if you had the chance, I mean, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it as a whole. Brad, you got to listen to the majority of it as well. That the positions and the perspectives, the opinions, were argued in the highest court in the land with respect and dignity and strength on both sides. And that happens in America. And that can happen in our teeny tiny little corner in the heart of the country right here on the Annie Fry Show as well, where I have a very passionate, fervent side to this. And I will argue it and defend it till the day I die. But the conversation needs to be able to happen, and it doesn't have to happen the way it happens on Twitter or, in comment sections. What we got to see in the Supreme Court today, whether you were like contorting yourself when you heard the pro-abortion side arguing or the converse, wow, that is at the epicenter of what America is.
Yeah, and if you listen to, I don't agree with the pro-abortion side, but when you listen to what they were saying, you could understand where they were coming from without accepting that as the reality. And I think that's an important thing that we miss in our discussions whenever we debate these things.
Also, I'm going way over here. If you are somebody who is super pro-life or super some people call it pro-choice. I think you're either pro-life or pro-abortion. I don't really feel like, I think pro-choice is a cop-out, but that, I digress. If you are on one of those sides, what you heard today or haven't heard yet, but could go back and listen to, you are going to get to hear the absolute best attempt that exists on the face of the planet for the other side. The most respectful, fully thought out presentation as to why abortion should exist. To me, I mean, that's the other side for me. I get to hear what does the other side think in the most well-rounded, well-thought-out way. And then I get to hear that and go, you're wrong. And in my mind, intellectually think through why. It is a good exercise to sharpen your mind and your perspective. And we're going to hear some of that when we come back. Brad and I will weigh in on this. And this is when I really want to personally invite you to come check out the Annie Fry YouTube channel, the Annie Fry Show Facebook page, because we have a live chat going right there. And we are going to include your comments about some of the things that we're playing here and what you may have already heard. We're going to include those comments on the air and on the live stream. So come join us. Be a part of the show. Join the live chat on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Subscribe to the channel while you're there. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy, beautiful Wednesday. It is gorgeous outside, and I just saw that tomorrow it's supposed to be in the 70s. What? I'm okay with that. I need to get the Christmas lights up on the outside of the house.
Same.
I am struggling, and I would love your thoughts and opinions on this. Comment on the live chat. We have a two-story house and a walkout basement in the back, so the back is like three stories. My husband has no problem. Confidence, some might even say arrogance, about climbing on the roof to put up those lights. And every time he's up there, I'm like, why did I let him do, in my mind, why did I let him do this? He's going to fall off the roof. I'm going to lose my husband because I had to have Christmas lights. So I'm like, maybe you shouldn't do it. It's always a thing. It's always fine. But I'm kind of like, don't put lights up on the roof.
So what is your question? Should you put up lights or should you pay somebody to put up lights or what?
The question, which I will put out there for people to comment on the live stream, and we will circle back to this, is am I being neurotic and should I just let my husband do his thing? Or I've had this conversation before. Or should we do something else? And should he not? So let's table it.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about the okay. Supreme Court stuff, but I do want to come back to that. Remind me in the 2 o'clock hour to talk about that.
I will do my best.
Please. I need reminders. Real quick before I dive into some of the sound, do you have any thoughts on what you heard so far today in the Supreme Court hearing about the 15-week viability line that is being sought in Mississippi?
I think that, and I forget who it was, I was listening to the audio, but I thought that this particular justice made a pretty good point that, you know, that it seems like the line is arbitrary and the arguments being made from the, let's call them the pro-abortion side, is that there's a difference between pro-choice and viability. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point, because what they're saying is like, this is about a woman's right to choose. So why are we talking about a viability line? And then they talked about, you know, I forget the word that they used, but the and you talked about this in your monologue. The woman's right doesn't change at that viability line. The woman's desires don't change at that viability line. But the thing that really surprised me and encouraged me in this was whenever I heard justices talking about there is a whole other side to this, and we're trying to figure out how to rectify two different arguments about this that cannot be rectified.
Yeah, someone's going to have to take a side.
I'm trying not to give away too much from the audio because the audio is really good.
That a woman still has the same interest in terminating her pregnancy after the viability line has been crossed.
Yes, Your Honor, but the court balanced the interest, and in
okay.
ordering
and
the interest
look at
the
state. Interest on the other side. The fetus has an interest in having a life, and that doesn't change, does it, from the point before viability to the point after viability?
So, that was Justice Alito. regardless of where you set a viability line, you say it's 15 weeks, you say it's 24 weeks, regardless of where that line is drawn, the interest of a pro abortive or an abortion-determined woman will likely be the same at 14 weeks as they would at 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. So is 15 weeks just taking a dart and throwing it at the board and saying, okay? And his point is that that fetus's interests are the same at 14 weeks and 16 weeks, and that is to pursue life.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. Let's go through some, let's just listen to some of what all of these different justices say. And I got to tell you, I don't want to make this about Trump, but I'm going to talk about that in the next segment. Boy, thank you, Donald Trump.
The other side says, though, that there are two interests at stake, that there's also the interest in fetal life at stake as well. And in your brief, you say that the existing framework accommodates, that's your word, both the interest of the pregnant woman and the interest of the fetus. And the problem, I think the other side would say, and the reason this issue's hard, is that you can't accommodate both interests. You have to pick. That's the fundamental problem. And one interest has to prevail over the other. At any given point in time. And that's why this is so challenging.
That is Justice Kavanaugh, who, while I'm listening to this, and yes, fine, I was in the shower while I was listening to it on my phone on YouTube TV, trying to figure out who was whom when they were speaking. And I understand who Brett Kavanaugh is because I can hear him saying, I like beer.
Same.
Right? I'm like, who is that? I like beer. I still like beer. That's totally Kavanaugh. That's what I hear. It's just the truth.
You're not alone. My brain went there, too.
I think. And the question then becomes, what does the Constitution say about that? And I just want to get your reaction to what the other side's theme is, and I've mentioned it in my prior questions. When you have those two interests at stake, and both are important, as you acknowledge, why not? Why should this court be the arbiter rather than Congress, the state legislatures, state Supreme Courts, the people being able to resolve this? And there'll be different answers in Mississippi and New York, different answers in Alabama than California, because there are two different interests at stake, and the people in those states might value those interests somewhat differently. Why is that not the right answer?
So that was Brett Kavanaugh. And, you know, defining that there are two separate interests that are at stake that are in direct opposition to one another. This wasn't my particular issue when it comes to discussing abortion with people, which I always encourage you to do calmly. And if the conversation can't happen calmly, just don't have it. Is to always determine with the person who you're having the discussion with, what are we talking about? Is it, you know, we can call it a fetus. If you want to call it a fetus, I'll call it a fetus. If that means that we can have a respectable, potentially disagreeable conversation, I can call it a fetus. I'm not going to die on the hill of the semantics behind fetus or baby. But if I call it a fetus, are you going to admit or concede or confirm, whichever word you need to say, that that is human life? Are we talking about life or not? And until you determine with somebody what that is, you cannot determine the value of it. Is it life? If it's human life, are we going to suggest that it is really up to somebody's choice about the value of somebody's life? And there is no greater privilege in the world than to be able to choose whether or not someone is born or not. So are we discussing what happens to an unplanned and potentially unwanted life, or are we not? Because I can't have the conversation and defend my position if you don't understand that I'm defending life. And if you're not willing to agree with me on that, okay, I see your perspective, but we cannot have the conversation about what that woman should be able to do if you're talking about a clump of cells that doesn't have life, and I am. We can't agree upon anything. We don't agree on the premise. Before we go to a break here, I want to play one more of Donald Trump's nominees, Amy Coney Barrett. And this safe haven conversation, she brings safe haven laws into the picture. This is really important because I think she says in here, safe haven laws say up to 48 hours after the birth of a child, you can surrender that child, walk away, no questions asked, no responsibility left, which means she's questioning. I don't think she's necessarily arguing is the justice involved, but she is questioning the argument suggesting the pro-abortive argument of two problems that exist if abortion goes away: the undue burden of the pregnancy and the undue burden of the parenting responsibility. Listen to the way she goes through this.
Ms. Rickleman, I have a question about the safe haven laws. So petitioner points out that in all 50 states, you can terminate parental rights by relinquishing a child after abortion. And I think the shortest period might have been 48 hours, if I'm remembering the data correctly. So it seems to me, seen in that light, both Roe and Casey emphasized the burdens of parenting. And insofar as you and many of your amici focus on the ways in which the forced parenting, forced motherhood, would hinder women's access to the workplace and to equal opportunities, it's also focused on the consequences of parenting and the obligations of motherhood that flow from pregnancy. Why don't the safe haven laws take care of that problem? It seems to me that it focuses the burden much more narrowly. There is, without question, an infringement on bodily autonomy, you know, which we have in other contexts like vaccines. However, it doesn't seem to me to follow that pregnancy and then parenthood are all part of the same burden. And so it seems to me that the choice more focused would be between, say, the ability to get an abortion at 23 weeks or the state requiring the woman to go 15, 16 weeks more and then terminate parental rights at the conclusion. Why didn't you address the safe haven laws and why don't they matter?
Fantastic question. This is
I think they
answer.
Don't matter for a couple of reasons, Your Honor. First, even if some of those laws are new since Casey, the idea that a woman could place a child up for adoption has, of course, been true since Roe. So it's a consideration that the court already had before it when it decided those cases and adhered to the viability line. But in addition, we don't just focus on the burdens of parenting, and neither did Roe and Casey. Instead, pregnancy itself is unique. It imposes unique physical demands and risk on women, and in fact has impact on all of their lives and their ability to care for other children, other family members, on their ability to work. And in particular, in Mississippi, those risks are alarmingly high. It's 75 times more dangerous to give birth in Mississippi than it is to have a pre-viability abortion. And those risks are disproportionately threatening the lives of women of color.
So then Amy Coney Barrett responded.
Actually, as I read Roe and Casey, they don't talk very much about adoption. It's a passing reference that means out of the obligations of parenthood. But as I hear this answer, then are you saying that the right, as you conceive of it, is grounded primarily in the bearing of the child and the caring of pregnancy and not so much looking forward into the consequences on professional opportunities and work life and economic burdens?
A great distinguishment between the burdens of that a woman unilaterally, I know in the gender world that we're in right now, crazy to say that, right? That a woman bears. I haven't even gone into the whole ridiculousness of adding that linguistic, semantic factor into the conversations that took place at the Supreme Court today. Listen here to the response because...
Your Honor, I believe it's both, and that is exactly how Casey talked about it. It talked about the two strands of cases that supported the right. One was the strand of cases supporting bodily integrity, and it cited to cases like Cruzan and Riggins versus Nevada. And the second was the strand of cases supporting decisional autonomy, and specifically decisions related to childbearing, marriage, and procreation decisions like Griswold, Loving. And so it's really both strands that we're relying on here.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, who is this council protecting? It's protecting women. What women need to have abortions? What babies are so much of a burden that it really needs to be legally upheld that their existence is not worth protecting in the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Bodily autonomy, that's a huge part of this conversation. Why are we not determining that the baby or the fetus has bodily autonomy? We'll talk about that in just a minute. Don't go away.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show.
Yeah, I think I'll make me some homemade soup. I'm feeling pretty good, and that's the truth. It's neither drink nor drug induced. No, I'm just doing all right. And it's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining.
The point you made about the impact on women and their place in society, those were certainly made in Roe as well. What we have before us, though, is a 15-week standard. Are you suggesting that the difference between 15 weeks and viability are going to have the same sort of impacts as you were talking about, or as we were talking about in Roe?
So I want to let you listen in here real quick, and I don't have a lot of time because I just talked so much and talked so long in the last segments, to the response of the counsel to that was Chief Justice Roberts there saying the difference between viability, which I think is 24 weeks right now, to the 15 weeks that Mississippi is arguing for. How would this affect women and their life? And why would women need to have an abortion? What kind of woman would need to have an abortion after 15 weeks? Here's what the pro-abortive side thinks about who should have access to an abortion.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe they would, because people who need abortion after 15 weeks are often in the most challenging circumstances. As I mentioned, there are people who have perhaps had a major health or life change, a family illness, a job loss, a separation, young people or people who are on contraception or pregnant for the first time and who are delayed in recognizing the signs of pregnancy, or poor women who often have much more trouble navigating access to care. And if they're denied the ability to make this decision because there's a ban after 15 weeks, they will suffer all of the consequences that the court has talked about in the past.
Oh my gosh, I can't handle it. I cannot handle it. How does this side of this issue get away with talking like this? Because all we ever hear, folks, all we ever hear about is privilege, is about the idea that some people are born into privilege. What if you're not born at all because the woman who was going to bear you was poor? That's what this woman just said. That is outrageous. Like, don't gloss over this whole thing and be all like, oh, I'm still pro-life, or I'm still pro-choice. I don't like abortion, but I don't feel like I can tell a woman what to do. There are babies not being born. Their life is taken from them. Yes, the life exists, and it is removed from their bodies. that exist inside the women who conceive them. Yes, with the man, and we're not talking about the man at all today, which is ridiculous because that's 50% of the equation, but I digress. We are talking about an actual defense in front of the Supreme Court of the United States that suggests that there are people who need abortion after 15 weeks because they're poor and they can't, listen to this, navigate access to proper health care. So they're poor and stupid. That's what this woman is advocating for. You're telling me that these women are so poor and so unable to navigate the healthcare system to get care for their child, but they're going to get the hundreds of dollars that it requires to get an abortion, where they are going to have to go find a Planned Parenthood or an abortion clinic near them. They can navigate that, and they can get the money, they can get the funds and the means and the resources and the transportation and the care to have an abortion, but we can't expect them to put themselves into a situation where that baby's life doesn't have to be sacrificed because they're living a poor and less intelligent existence. That baby doesn't deserve to live. You want to talk about privilege? It's reprehensible, people. It is unintelligible to think that a life is not worthy because of the circumstances that the mother lives. We need to uphold these women. We need to provide them with the care and the compassion that they need. If they are without means, we need to help these children live life and exist. I'm telling you what, if we can find $500 million of the American taxpayers' hard-earned money to fund Planned Parenthood, we can help that poor woman who cannot navigate her own health care navigate herself to a clinic that will care for her during the pregnancy and after. And we are littered with those clinics around here. Thrive, Mosaic, and so many other people out there looking to care for these families. Don't fall for it, people. We'll be back with Dory Murdoch.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!